Okay, we have a number of guests with us today. First of all, we'll start off with guests from France, Santier, Azabert and Régénie.
I'm happy to be with you again today.
And, great to see you.
Great to see you. So I think you are going to tell us a little bit about a new criminal complaint that you have filed based on a analysis of Ariane Billarin, which we're going to talk to later. Maybe you can give us a little bit information about this suit that's, or the complaint that, what does it, the status is there?
I think I will let Xavier explain because I'm under subject to secrecy of the investigation. So I can help to explain, but I prefer that Xavier introduce the criminal complaint to you.
Very good. Very good. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, thanks a lot, Virginie. Thank you, Viviane and Rainer, for letting us present the background of this legal action. So here I am speaking today as the president of one of the civilian associations called Bon Sens. We have been very active in order to defend, I would say, the civil rights of our fellow countrymen in France, and have been very active trying to link with various associations around the globe. And I have been in touch back in May with the Indian Bar Association. I understand that you interviewed Dipali Ojha, and they filed a complaint against the WHO and various other, I would say, parties that they believed are committing, I would say, offenses towards their population. We worked extensively with various members of the board of Bon Sens, as well as with some lawyers in France, and we sort of asked Virginie to come up with a strategy of how to conduct the same, I would say, procedure in Europe. Of course, it actually raises a number of challenges because we are under constitutional law in France. They have case law, the legislation systems are different, the approach, and we started by asking ourselves what was the foundation that we wanted to attack, and what was the foundation of the potential claims. And the first starting point was the role that the media played, okay, in this, in broadcasting a message. Whether the message is correct or incorrect, that's one thing. But if you're broadcasting a message which is correct, you're amplifying this message. If you're broadcasting a message that is incorrect, you're amplifying this message. And therefore, it's the repetition of this message that actually creates a potential damage to or lead an individual to conduct an action. And so we started by filing this lawsuit, which is called a lawsuit against X, because we're not naming any individuals, we are aiming at some groups of media. But the idea was to say, okay, these media have been broadcasting a number of messages that relies on partial scientific evidence. And for us, the foundation was that was disloyalty of information that leads to action, especially decision with respect to vaccination or decision with respect to no treatment or decision with respect to stay at home. So these media have played an instrumental role in keeping our population either away from the doctors or broadcasting incomplete information. So the foundation of this really is, if you have an incomplete information as a media, then you're engaging to some form of propaganda. Okay. Part of the work that we looked at is how can you justify, how can you factualize all of this? Because it's, of course, really difficult. So if you suppress part of the narrative with respect to an early treatment by saying there is a medical consensus that early treatment don't work, or that paracetamol is going to be the only drug that's there. What you're doing is you're impressing upon individual certain elements, and you're modifying the perception of individuals. And this is conducted by, I would say, the media. Now, in France and in many other countries, the responsibility relies on the director of publication of a media. He has a penal responsibility whenever he's broadcasting a message. And if you can prove that this message has been broadcasted and is wrong, then he still has the responsibility of being broadcasted. And so the idea behind this is, where this message wrongful, where this message willingly wrongful, and how did this message influence the our fellow citizen to either go and get vaccinated or stay at home or other form of treatment. So it's really relying, the background is really to work on what was the role of the amplification of this media in either suppressing access to treatments or incentivizing an individual to do something that would be against his interest. Okay? So just by way of detail, the lawsuit is about 100 pages long. There's 700 pages of annex. So it's quite comprehensive. The work that has been done with a group of scientists is to bring as many facts as possible. These facts can fall into various categories. They can fall into the category of, are early treatment effective? Is the vaccination effective? Are the side effects present or not? As much as the psychological impact that repetition of a message. That's why the work of Ariane is very important, because here you're entering into the space of psychology where facts are more difficult to actually demonstrate to any form of a judge or legal system. So you have to rely on expertise, independent expertise. All of the parties that have played a role in these lawsuits are totally independent. We do not have any link to the pharmaceutical industry, nor any link to or any conflict of interest. And it's important. Claim has been carried by two associations. One of them is Bon Sens. The other one is an association of doctors who is a longstanding establishment of dealing with, I would say good medicine practices, probably is the best way of describing. So that's basically what we did. It was filed last week. Of course, it's early days. The work that has been done is to provide a canvas, which is as comprehensive as possible. If I go into the details, there are two strands of the work. The first thing is the legal framework to provide evidence and to substantiate evidence. And the second one is to link this with the evidence-based medicine legal framework. So in the legal framework, you have to provide the strongest level of evidence. And the evidence-based medicine, the highest level of proof has been described as the meta-analysis. And the lowest level of proof is at the base of the pyramid. And what's interesting is that we've excluded early treatment on the highest level of proof, and we've included early vaccination on the lowest element of proof. So we have we probably have an excess of caution on excluding a treatment that could potentially work, that's been in place for 35 years, 40 years, with very little side effects, and included on a low basis of precautionary measures. Vaccination. So really there's a reversal of the rules of the regulation, and this is what we're trying to demonstrate within the claim. To go a little bit further, we will now deepen into who bears those messages. Who are the doctors that have been advocating those messages on television? Who are the politicians that have been advocating? But this is the object of a second complaint.
Yeah, I think it's a good project to also go in that direction. I mean, we've been in Germany, the criminal court is at this point is not a great hope, but I think it's important to write these legal briefs or hand in these complaints so that we can also document what's going on. And who knows, if the direction of the wind changes, then it might very soon be an opportunity for judges who are, you know, willing to comply to the law, to take up such an endeavor and really come up with the right decision.
Xavier, is it can you rely on your prosecutors? Can you rely on your district attorneys? I'm asking this question because here in Germany, we cannot. The European Supreme Court has decided, I think, 2 years ago that German prosecutors, the prosecutor's office, is not independent enough to issue international arrest warrants. Because there's always a fear that this is whatever is being done in terms of arrest warrants, international arrest warrants, that there's always some bias, there's politics behind it. And German prosecutors, for example, even if they did decide, if one of them is willing to decide to investigate these matters that we're dealing with here, the PCR test, that it's a fraud, he would very quickly get an order from his superiors or from the Ministry of Justice to stop doing that. Is it that you in France, just like in Italy, have a different kind of district attorney's office, a different type of much more independent prosecutors?
Okay, well, first of all, I'm not a lawyer, so I'm not, you know, my experience of this is as a citizen. Maybe Virginie can actually talk a little bit more about this. But my perception is that if you are establishing a penal case, it totally depends what your penal case is about. You know, here you're talking about international arrest warrants. Here, in the case that we have at hand, we are talking about the responsibility of the director of publication of a media. So, in essence, what the judge has to decide is, did this person broadcast a message that's wrong, and what are the consequences? So what we're doing is we're seeking on establishing the responsibility of this individual in the conduct of the broadcasting of a wrongful message. So it's quite simple. And I believe the system is sufficiently independent to decide upon this simple case. Mm-hmm. We're not seeking for the responsibility of the commanditaries or the end, I would say, users or the end players. Here we're only asking, okay, it's quite simple. If you put in front of everybody in television a doctor that has some conflict of interest, and you don't ask whether he has some conflict of interest, and that doctor is advocating that a treatment has been suppressed on the basis of that there is general consensus. Is this true or not? Okay. So here you're not talking about who is the commanditory and who is the who's asked for that. You're really asking, was this right or wrong? So it's a simple answer to ask. Now, and that responsibility of the person is engaged, because if it's a lie, okay, and the consequences are that some individuals have acted upon this and didn't go to the doctors or went for vaccination. At one point, there's a statement that says that there is 80% of hospitalized people who are non-vaccinated. Now, is this true or not? Now, if this message is wrong, okay, then the consequences are just that drives some individuals to go to get vaccinated. Now, if it's wrong, it's just false promises. It's like disloyal information. So for me, the justice, at least the penal system, is sufficiently independent today to decide on this. Now, then what it will do is it will in turn trickle down on who said that. You know, here it's, I'm just responsible, who's responsible for broadcasting this message? Mm-hmm. I don't know, Virginie, whether you want to add anything on this.
I would like to add that there's also the question of the censorship from the GAFA, which is the object of this criminal complaint. I would like to say also that it's quite new to fulfill complaints in front of the criminal court. Mm-hmm. I would like to say that, because the previous complaints were in front of the prosecutors, and this one is in front of the dean of the judicial judges.
Mm-hmm. That could make really big difference then.
Yes.
Because you don't have to go through the prosecutors, and it doesn't make a difference if they're independent or not. But I do believe that you do have special prosecutors, just like they do in Italy. They have specially educated prosecutors, anti-mafia prosecutors, who are truly independent. And I think you have something similar to that. However, you don't even have to worry about that, because you go directly to the court. And this is a novelty, right? This is brand new.
Yes, it's not new, but it's because we write the fact that it's a crime. Mm-hmm. And when it's a crime, there's a specific article in the criminal code that says that you don't need to go in front of the prosecutor. We can go directly in front of the dean of the investigating judge. So
very good. Mm-hmm.
It's more direct. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we will have the chance to that the judges open the investigation, because they can refuse, but we need to try. Yes. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the first one that I know.
I'm sorry.
No, Reinhard, you go back on this. I think it's as Virginie says, it's a first, but it's also not entirely directed towards the end gamers. It's really directed is to the responsibility of broadcasting of a message, okay? The role that they're playing in suppressing or in driving a consumer. So it's, if you are into antitrust or into competitive landscape, what you have is you have a duty of loyalty of information. Okay, was the information that was delivered to the French citizen loyal? And or was it disloyal? Was it willingly disloyal? Was it unwillingly disloyal? So it makes it fairly easy for the dean of judges to address this issue. It's quite straightforward, you know, as a decision. Of course, they can refuse, but for us, it was much, much easier to actually address. Because there are so many messages that have been broadcasted, be it in Germany, be it in France, in many countries. You've had the same message, okay? You can sort of put them into various categories. The first one is the social distancing measures. Are they efficient or not? The second one is treatments, suppression of treatments, you know, suppression of or pushing doctors not to actually prescribe things. So you're suppressing a weapon in the tool case of a doctor, and then there is the reason why you would suppress a treatment that has potentially some side effects, but didn't have some side effects for 50 years, and suddenly you find out those elements, and then you have a new treatment where you are taking a totally different approach to evaluation of this new treatment, and you're putting all your eggs in the same basket, so you have this message that on appearance. And Ariane can talk about this much more in the way she expresses that in the propaganda and the totalitarianism approach, because I think it's very important to look at it on the psychological consequences this has on people. Because what you drive with disloyal information is you drive beliefs. You don't drive facts in the population. And it's if you act upon belief, then you're it's like a religion, okay? It's like, you know, is Apple better than Samsung? You know, you need facts on one hand, but then you have the soft element of a brand. And here, the soft elements that are being driven into the population are of an importance, in my view. And we need to be very careful to rely on the facts and the consequences of those facts, especially if those facts are distorted.
Yeah, I think it's a good... Yes, go ahead, Viviane.
No, it's very interesting. I mean, I think it'll be, we have here Dr. Ariane Pilarin with us. She basically had her thoughts about this whole thing are the basis of what you filed now. And I think maybe we should switch to her to get a little bit, you know, more background on this whole constellation. Maybe I can just introduce her a little bit. She's a clinical psychologist, a doctor in psychopathology, university lecturer, author, a speaker, and consultant. She has written more than 25 books, and she specializes in questions of like bullying, paranoia, abuse of power, and the recovery of personal power. Maybe could we, and I think, Xavier, you're going to do the translation into French. Is that correct?
Yeah, here I'm shifting from my role as a translator. I will help, and with Virginie, we will help Ariane to conduct sort of the interview.
Very good.
Okay, perfect. So maybe one thing.
The three, Viviane, let's point out the three basic questions that we can talk about or will talk about. Why do people engage in a collective delusion? Why do some people not join, regardless of educational status? And then the totalitarian system uses harassment as a method to establish itself, the ultimate tool of the pathological paranoids. What is harassment? And she's also going to talk about the intention to harm. I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, so maybe we start with the first question. Why do people engage in this in such a collective delusion? What's the psychological background of this thing?
Donc Ariane, c'est clair. Trois questions. La première, c'est pourquoi les gens se sont, on va dire, ont participé à cet effort, on va dire, collectif de désillusion. Et la dernière question, ce sera sur la partie du totalitarisme et les conséquences.
Ok. Guten Tag.
Bonjour.
English is awful. Donc, je vais parler en français. Xavier, tu me dis selon le rythme. Je vais parler d'un point de vue de philosophie morale et politique et de psychopathologie, c'est-à-dire l'étude des processus psychiques individuels et collectifs qui font que nous sommes dans cette situation aujourd'hui.
So, Ariane is going to talk about, from a psychological point of view, all the way to psychopathological point of view, on why we engage into the behavior that we have engaged into as of today.
La première chose, je suis totalement d'accord avec l'analyse du professeur Desmet que vous avez interrogé. Nous sommes dans une dérive totalitaire. La raison pour laquelle nous sommes dans une dérive totalitaire, c'est que le totalitarisme vise la domination totale sur la vie des individus.
I will do the translation. Sure. Ariane is in full agreement with Professor Desmet's sort of statement that you've had in this, because what we are saying is we are driving to a total totalitarianism sort of regimen, which engages in the control of every single aspect of one's point of view or position.
Notamment jusqu'à la vie intime des individus, la domination totale sur la vie intime des individus.
This includes the personal and private life of individuals.
Pour faire court, le totalitarisme fonctionne à l'idéologie, c'est-à-dire à la création d'un récit, d'une croyance fausse qui se substitue à la réalité et auquel on est prié d'adhérer.
Le totalitarism relies on a belief where individuals have to adhere to. In essence, we're substituting reality with this belief.
It's a false scenario?
Si, une idéologie. L'idéologie, c'est ni plus ni moins qu'un délire.
Ideology is just nothing else than a delirium.
Parce que le récit ne correspond pas à la réalité de l'expérience.
Because the narrative doesn't correspond to the reality of the experience.
Un délire en psychopathologie, c'est la création d'une nouvelle réalité dans un récit pour remplacer la réalité existante.
A delirium, from a psychopathological point of view, is the creation of another reality to replace the original sort of reality.
Et nous sommes donc dans un délire collectif.
And here we are in a collective delirium.
Pour comprendre comment ça fonctionne, il faut relier donc le régime totalitaire s'appuie sur des maladies mentales. Ce sont des maladies mentales qui font le régime totalitaire.
In order to understand how it works, the totalitarian regime relies on mental illnesses or disorder.
Les pathologies mentales qui prennent le pouvoir dans un régime totalitaire, ce sont la psychose paranoïaque, sur laquelle je vais revenir, la perversion et la psychopathie.
Okay, there are three pathologies that allow us to take control in a totalitarian regime. The first one is paranoia. The second one is psychopathology.
Perversion.
Perversion. And the third one, Ariane, is
psychopathie.
La paranoïa est sans doute ce qui va nous intéresser le plus parce que la paranoïa fonctionne au délire de persécution.
Paranoia is what will interest the most because this is how it engages with the conduct of persecution.
Il s'agit de désigner un ennemi dans la paranoïa qui peut être extérieur ou intérieur. Donc, par exemple, ici, dans le cas qui nous occupe, l'ennemi, au départ, c'est un virus, ce qui est en soi fou puisque nous sommes constitués de virus. Donc,
so
ça veut dire...
designate an enemy. You know, in paranoia, we have to designate an enemy. In this particular, in order to identify this enemy, in this particular case, what is crazy is that the enemy is a virus, and it's quite pervert because we're all formed of viruses.
Et il va s'agir dans la paranoïa de harceler en justifiant le harcèlement pour éliminer l'ennemi désigné par la persécution.
It's about harassment. It's harassment and to designate the enemy. Is that all right? They use harassment to designate the enemy. What you say?
Je vais redire. Dans le délire de persécution de la paranoïa, il y a un ennemi désigné, qui peut être une personne ou ici au départ un virus, mais maintenant ça glisse, ça évolue. Du virus, on passe au non-vacciné. Et cet ennemi s'est justifié dans le délire paranoïaque de le harceler parce qu'il est censé persécuter. Pas si c'est...
Okay, I'm going to try and translate this element because it's not very easy when you're not a specialist in this particular field. What we're saying is here, we have to identify this enemy. This enemy can be a virus or a person. In this particular instance, we've identified that it is a virus. And what we're then engaging into is the use of hassling in order to push this enemy down people's throats, I would say, to really drive it home. And that is what drives the paranoia, in essence.
Pour faire rentrer tout le monde dans le délire, il faut convaincre. La paranoïa, nous l'appelons en psychiatrie une folie résonante. Elle a l'apparence de la raison, mais c'est fou.
Okay, in this particular instance, we have to convince to drive this paranoia towards everybody and have the collective delirium. You have to convince individual of this of this element. And you have to convince them through, I would say, some form of reasoning. And it's leveraging this reasoning that you will drive this towards the global or the global delirium.
Mais il y a deux problèmes. Tout d'abord, c'est un délire d'interprétation, c'est-à-dire que c'est un raisonnement qui se fonde sur des interprétations. Le deuxième problème, c'est qu'il ne suit pas les règles de la logique. Et le troisième problème, c'est qu'il n'est pas en rapport avec la réalité de l'expérience.
OK, and here there are three issues. The first one is this is this relies this is a delirium of interpretation.
The yes. first there is no logic.
There's no logic.
Yes. And the third one is
il ne correspond pas à la réalité de l'expérience.
Doesn't correspond to the reality of the experience.
Pour s'instaurer et survivre, le régime totalitaire a besoin d'un ennemi identifié qui légitime son existence.
In order to exist, the totalitarian regime needs to have an enemy in order to exist.
Et parce que ce régime n'est pas légitime, la présence de cet ennemi justifie la mise en place de mesures d'exception, de confiscation des droits, et cela passe par le harcèlement.
And because this enemy is not legitimate or is not properly
le régime n'est pas légitime.
The regime is not legitime then and this enemy is not that then what you have to do is you have to use other measures in order to influence the individuals down that belief.
And confiscate the rights.
Yeah, and confiscation of the rights. Yes.
Et justifier de rester au pouvoir.
To justify to keep the power. Yes.
Voilà. Comment fonctionne le harcèlement? Donc le harcèlement, c'est la méthode du régime totalitaire.
Harassment is a method of the totalitarian regime.
Qu'est-ce que le harcèlement? C'est le fait d'exercer des pressions sur des individus pour entretenir un état de terreur.
Totalitarian regime is that needs to keep pressure on individuals. To obtain a terrorism situation, yes.
Le harcèlement va utiliser la manipulation à la terreur et à l'empathie.
Harassment will use a manipulation of terrorism and perhaps lack of empathy. Une absence d'empathie?
Non, l'empathie. Par exemple, si tu ne mets pas ton masque, tu vas tuer ta grand-mère. C'est de l'empathie.
Solidarité.
Émotion. Terreur et empathie. Ou fear, yeah. fear and empathy.
Terrorism and empathy for others. Peut-être que le collectif
fear and empathy.
C'est ça.
Manipulation. Émotion. Deux émotions manipulées.
Ah, OK.
La peur.
Both emotions are manipulated at the same time. There's terrorism and empathy that used.
Le but du harcèlement, c'est d'obtenir quelque chose des individus qu'ils n'auraient pas donné s'ils n'avaient pas été harcelés.
The goal is to obtain something from the individuals that they will not give if there is no such terrorism and empathy.
Pour faire un harcèlement efficace, il faut utiliser des traumatismes répétés sur la durée.
So for an effective harassment, you need to drive repeated trauma.
Un traumatisme, c'est une menace à l'intégrité de la personne, une menace de mort.
A trauma is a threat to the integrity of an individual.
Et une menace de mort. Et c'est un message, c'est le message qui a été passé en 2020 aux populations, c'est nous allons tous mourir.
The message is say Xavier.
Okay, so what Arène is saying is that the trauma is something that is dangerous for us, and this is what has actually been used since 2020 when the message was a death message where we're all going to die, or we have a risk of dying from this virus.
Le harcèlement utilise aussi le sentiment de culpabilité et la séduction des populations.
The harassment used the guilty feeling of the population.
Et la séduction.
And seduction.
Mais aussi le chantage, l'intimidation et la menace.
It also uses blackmail, intimidation, and threats.
Et enfin, c'est un abus de pouvoir parce que c'est toujours une personne qui a du pouvoir sur les autres qui peut exercer le harcèlement.
And it's an abuse of power because it's always somebody that is sitting with a power-based position that can conduct this harassment. Well, you need to have a power base in order to be able to engage into harassing behavior.
Une autre chose qu'utilise le harcèlement et qu'on a vu, c'est ce qui s'appelle un conflit de loyauté.
Another element that we've seen in the harassment behavior is the conflict of loyalty.
C'est-à-dire, on oblige les personnes à choisir entre, c'est un choix impossible, entre deux choses entre lesquelles il est impossible de choisir. Par exemple, entre...
Okay, what we're doing is we're pushing somebody to choose between two impossible choices. Par exemple,
entre sa santé et son travail.
For example, where you have to choose between your health and your work. You have to make a trade-off between one of the two.
Le harcèlement est le chef-d'œuvre des psychoses paranoïaques. C'est très important. Et il comprend l'intention de nuire à l'autre.
Okay, harassment is the, I would say, the masterpiece of... paranoia, and it's a cornerstone element.
La nuisance à l'autre est considérée comme nécessaire.
Then what this implies, it implies a nuisance towards somebody else, and it's a needed element in order to conduct the harassment.
Au nom d'un idéal délirant, inatteignable. Par exemple, l'éradication du virus. C'est impossible.
Okay, and this paranoiac psychosis is in the name of an unattainable goal. For example, the eradication of the virus. We have a zero virus goal. Is this achievable? And if it's not achievable, or we are driving the belief that this is achievable, that's part of the harassment process.
Et dans la psychose paranoïaque, donc qui est le délire du système totalitaire, on exige du coup, le sacrifice de certains citoyens.
And so what we in the psychosis, the paranoia psychosis, what we are what it implies is the sacrifice of a number of individuals.
C'est-à-dire que l'individu n'est plus considéré comme un être à part entière avec des droits, une dignité et une intégrité, mais comme un moyen d'acquérir un but. Et donc, si on doit le sacrifier parce qu'on estime que c'est justifié, on le sacrifie.
So the we're going to try and actually do it in short. In essence, that the individual is being dismissed of some of its rights, dignity, rights to dignity and integrity, and is considered as a mean to an end as opposed to an individual in order to reach a particular goal.
It's not a human being anymore.
Yeah, it's a means to an end.
So this means that the extreme, you know, I mean, this complete illogical constellation and these, like, you know, going to extremes, like harassing the unvaccinated and, you know, making them, giving them a guilt trip, or like pointing to them as the, you know, the cause of the harm that the others, or the you know, the pain that the others have to live through with, you know, like limits of what they can do. So this is all part, this is all necessary to make it work. If it wasn't so extreme, it wouldn't have the same effect. Is that right?
Peut-être tu comprendras, Xavier. C'est donc pour ça, en fait, qu'on se retrouve avec cette pression faite sur les personnes non vaccinées. Est-ce que c'est pour suivre justement toutes ces choses extrêmes? C'est donc pour ça. C'est dans ce but.
En fait, dans le délire paranoïaque, il y a des thèmes et il y en a un qui est l'hypocondrie délirante. Hypocondrie, ça veut dire qu'on se croit malade, mais on n'est pas malade.
In all of this, there is one theme, which is you need to actually drive a delirium of hypochondria. Okay, it means that people believe that they are sick, but they're not sick. In essence.
Et
they believe that they're harmful to the system.
Et il faut trouver un coupable.
And you have to find a guilty body.
Pour se sentir cet inconfort, sentir ce malaise ou l'impression de cette maladie.
So you need to have to find a guilty body in order to feel this. So in essence, Viviane, what Ariane is saying, and this is my interpretation, is that in order to answer to your question with respect to the unvaccinated, they are being the ones which are being pointed in as the individuals who are not acting in the interest of the others in order to drive this delirium.
Does that mean that if the same message, oh, there is a dangerous virus out there, if that same message were relayed to us in a calm way, it wouldn't work. We need harassment. It needs to be driven down our throats. We need to be threatened. Only because they're doing this in a harassment manner, it works. Is that correct? A calm explanation wouldn't work.
Donc, la question c'est, est-ce que s'il le disait de manière calmement, c'est-à-dire sans le mécanisme de harcèlement, est-ce que ça marcherait? C'est-à-dire que, par exemple, s'il disait, bon, ben voilà, il y a un virus, le virus est dangereux, avec une manière calme et pondérée, sans le mécanisme d'harcèlement, est-ce que ça marcherait?
Il faut transmettre l'angoisse. C'est très important de transmettre l'angoisse.
So you need to transmit and to drive fear in a situation of anguish.
C'est fondamental parce que, en fait, ça va abîmer les liens de confiance entre les gens. La paranoïa, c'est la méfiance de tous contre tous.
Okay, what it's essential because what it does, it will drive, it will reduces the trust that everyone has in each other. And as Ariane says, paranoia is the defiance of everyone's against everyone. Lack of confidence, lack of trust. Mm-hmm. So you're in a defined mode against everything. You do not trust anything else or anybody else.
And can I ask, is this something that could happen just like out of an instinct? Like, you know, that the politician says, well, we have to, you know, drive the population now into this direction. So just because I feel it, that I have to do it like this, it's done like that? Or is it because there's someone has really put a lot of thought into, like, you know, kind of social engineering aspect in order to get this exact message out, to come to that, you know, to get people into that corner? Or can this happen just, you know, if I can it happen just for like coincidence that someone has, you know, it's just develops like this? Or is this like a, would you think this is like a script that's rolled out in order to come to that goal of, you know, to put people in this state of delusion?
Yeah, do we need a carefully planned agenda behind this?
Donc la question, Ariane, c'est est-ce qu'il faut un plan réfléchi pour atteindre cet objectif, ou est-ce que ça peut être la conséquence d'une réaction spontanée d'un individu, d'un homme politique, par exemple?
La paranoïa, c'est une conception du monde qui concerne beaucoup de passionnés et d'abuseurs de pouvoir. Et donc, c'est lié au complot, c'est-à-dire que ceux qui se complotent sont les paranoïaques au pouvoir.
Okay, so what you're saying is that paranoia is the tool that's actually being used by individuals who are in power in order to reduce trust or affect trust. So it is, in essence, those who are in power who are most subject to paranoia because they are subject to complotism, you know, and conspiracy theory. So they believe that because they're in power, if they are not driving their agendas through, they will be victims of. And so that's why they start to develop these elements of paranoia.
And it's an idea of the world also.
Yeah. Conception of the world. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Oui, c'est une conception du monde dans laquelle le groupe d'individus, hein, on peut dire que le groupe d'individus qui va être au pouvoir avec cette conception paranoïaque, s'estimant perpétuellement persécuté, a besoin de persécuter les autres pour se maintenir au pouvoir. Donc, ça suppose de l'intention de nuire et ça suppose quelque chose qui s'inscrit dans la durée. Il y a une responsabilité parce que... Alors, traduisez peut-être ça.
Okay, what she's saying is that it's a concession of the world that those who are in power, okay, they have to have nuisance instinct because they believe some people will try to affect them. So you need to protect yourself. They need to protect themselves and they need to drive this nuisance instinct or to use this nuisance instinct to protect themselves.
Oh, that is really interesting. This means, as far as I can understand, this seems to mean that in our social systems, those people who rise up the ranks, who go up the ranks and end up in political power in particular, that they are, I mean, if I look at some of the politicians here in Germany, obviously they're suffering from paranoia. But is it true that many of them do suffer from paranoia in the sense that if they don't defend themselves, they'll lose their power and that therefore they're willing to push this agenda if only they're told you're going to lose power if you don't push this agenda?
Tu as compris, Ariane?
Oui.
En fait, est-ce que ils sont en gros, est-ce qu'ils sont tous comme ça parce qu'ils estiment que s'ils ne vont pas dans ce sens, ils vont perdre leur pouvoir?
Mon point de vue est que la psychose paranoïaque est donc un délire de persécution, les autres me veulent du mal, se déclenche à partir de culpabilité réelle. et que à partir du moment où on accède avec des méthodes sans doute pas très correctes au pouvoir et qu'on s'y maintient et qu'on va avoir des actes coupables, on va se sentir de plus en plus persécuté et donc on va de plus en plus persécuter les autres.
Okay. So our point of view is that the paranoia is derived from the fact that people believe that others will want to hurt them, okay, or will want to affect either their power base or to affect, you know, the decision that they're making. So it drives a protection mechanism because they believe others will try to hurt them.
Yes, and also that they made probably immoral things, acts, and that they are guilty somewhere, and that they know that, and that they cannot make other things that to go more and more in this paranoia. No,
Is it correct?
Protect themselves.
Is it correct that one there is an agenda? A well-planned agenda behind all of this, and two, that those who are carrying out this agenda, the politicians who are in power, are paranoid enough to push the agenda, because if they don't push it, they're going to lose power.
Est-ce que s'ils poussent pas l'agenda, ils vont perdre le pouvoir? Est-ce qu'ils sont persuadés de ça?
Il y a deux points. Le premier point, c'est: est-ce qu'il y a
un agenda,
on va dire un système qui est mis en place, bien planifié, et est-ce que ce qui va engendrer ce comportement de harcèlement, ce contrat de comportement de paranoïa, c'est parce qu'il y a une peur de la perte d'une peur qu'on va leur faire du mal, et du coup ça accentue leur comportement de persécution, on va dire, quelque part.
Je vais répondre déjà à la deuxième question. Une angoisse de ne pas être légitime au pouvoir par rapport aux actes déjà commis et qu'on le découvre, nous, les peuples.
So the first thing is that they have an anguish of population discovering that they are not legitimately acting in power. So they may not be acting in the interest of the population, or they're acting outside of the remit of their power base.
Ensuite, il y a un agenda transhumaniste. J'ai envoyé donc un dossier hier. Cet agenda n'est jamais sorti du nazisme. C'est la même conception du monde.
Okay, so there is an agenda. It's a transhumanism agenda. And for Ariane, it has never been taken out of Nazism, should I say?
C'est-à-dire, alors, c'est compliqué, hein. On a d'un côté, on va dire, la paranoïa, elle porte l'idéologie, c'est-à-dire le message, la fausse croyance, on est persécuté, il y a une menace extérieure ou intérieure. Voilà. Il faut rappeler, j'aimerais rappeler ici, que c'était la même conception sur l'épidémie de typhus qui a justifié la persécution des Juifs au niveau du nazisme.
OK, I'm going to... On typhus. I'm writing at the same time. Okay, on the one hand, what she's saying is that paranoia bears relies on ideology and on wrongful belief. And for her, it is the same belief on typhus that was actually imposed upon the Jewish in Nazi Germany.
Mais il n'y a pas que la paranoïa, c'est-à-dire...
But there's not only paranoia.
La paranoïa, c'est l'idéologie, le délire... la stratégie, l'agenda, la planification, la persécution. Ça, c'est la paranoïa. Mais on a aussi, je l'ai dit tout à l'heure, la perversion, c'est-à-dire des profils pervers qui vont, par exemple, s'enrichir toujours tirer leur intérêt sur les crises. Et cela participe aussi du système totalitaire.
Juste une chose, est-ce que les mêmes individus peuvent avoir les deux, être paranoïaque et pervers?
Il y a des traits pervers dans la paranoïa, il y a des ponts.
Okay, what you're saying is on the one hand, you have paranoia, which is ideology, planification, and on the other hand, you have perverted and perversion. And perverted individuals, for example, who are seeking to enrich themselves, who are taking advantage of any situation to either make money or whatever other value mechanism. And you have therefore these two avenues or these two behaviors. And Virginie asked the question whether you had some bridges between the two. Then you have some perverted and perversion and paranoia. And Ariane is saying, yes, there are some bridges between the two.
Ce qui nous intéresse, c'est qu'il y a une contagion du délire. Sinon,
the delirium has become contagious.
C'est-à-dire qu'on ne peut pas dire il y a quelques profils paranoïaques, il y a quelque chose de contagieux. Alors, est-ce que les paranoïaques croient à leur délire? Oui, mais ils ont l'intention de nuire pour la question de la responsabilité pénale. Hein.
So, paranoïaque has the intent of harm, which is very important for lawyers. To know.
Ils croient à leur délire, mais ils justifient l'utilisation du harcèlement, du sacrifice des individus pour soi-disant lutter contre l'ennemi.
Okay, paranoid profile, what they're doing in order to fight against their enemy or their identified enemy, they are justifying the intent to harm the population or those who are under themselves in order to achieve their goals. And what she's saying is that this is really important because the intention of harm exists and that has a legal bearing. Mm-hmm. That's the foundation for, Ariane, if I may, the question is, est-ce que ça c'est la base, est-ce que c'est une base en psychopathologie, est-ce que c'est une base juridique qui peut être reconnue par un tribunal?
Alors, j'ai eu des discussions en 2010 avec des professeurs en droit pénal sur cette question.
So, Ariane, what I ask Ariane is that in order to characterize this, I'm asking if this psychopathology has actually been used in legal cases before, and what Ariane is saying is that in 2010 she has had discussion on that basis with a law professor.
Et j'avais envoyé, je lui ai envoyé l'article en français de cette du point de vue en fait de mon point de vue de psychologue par rapport à la question de la responsabilité pénale dans le harcèlement.
And she has sent a part of that paper that she has sent us really looks at the responsibility or the penal responsibility of the of this behavior from a penal point of view. Et la question c'est comment on pourrait la caractériser la responsabilité pénale d'un point de vue
l'intention de nuire à l'intégrité.
Okay, so the way to qualify this from a penal point of view is the intention to bring nuisance to a personal integrity, to human integrity.
Il a conscience de ça.
So the individual is conscious, is consciously acting.
Il justifie que c'est pour.
Right now, your mic is off.
Que c'est pour le bien du peuple, le bien de l'autre qu'il le maltraite, mais il a conscience de maltraiter et de harceler.
Okay, so the individual is conscious that he's engaging into some hassling mechanism and persecution mechanism, but he's still doing it in order to obtain his goal.
And is this the kind of intent, even though it's driven by paranoia, is it still intent that is valid in a criminal sense, in a criminal law sense, or is this excused, as they say here in Germany?
Alors, est-ce que c'est l'intention qui est utilisée d'un point de vue criminel, ou est-ce que c'est utilisé comme étant une excuse, comme c'est utilisé en Allemagne, par exemple, pour excuser le comportement d'un paranoïaque?
Oui, pour dire qu'il est malade. Est-ce que ça le rend responsable ou justement exonéré de sa responsabilité?
C'est toute la question entre la psychologie et le droit. Si on parle, on va parler de psychose puisqu'il s'agit d'un délire, donc normalement, la responsabilité pénale devrait être exonérée. Ça, c'est vraiment l'article sur ce point précis que j'ai envoyé à Monsieur Fulmich. Donc, si la personne, normalement, est psychotique, donc délirante, elle est exonérée de responsabilité pénale. Mais mon point de vue, qui avait été sollicité comme experte à l'époque, c'est que sur cette psychose en particulier, il y a l'intention de nuire personnellement. Ensuite, elle va être justifiée, mais la personne sait très bien ce qu'elle fait au niveau de la nuisance sur l'autre. Simplement, elle va justifier que c'était bien normal d'atteindre son intégrité.
Donc, dans cette crise en particulier où on voit qu'il y a des liens d'intérêt, de la collusion, là, on peut estimer qu'il y a vraiment une intention de nuire consciente.
Mais qui est justifié ? C'est-à-dire, si on entend bien, bah, c'est pas grave que quelques-uns meurent, c'est le sacrifice pour le bien commun.
Exactement. Et donc, c'est ce que vous disiez tout à l'heure. C'est qu'en plus, ça se transmet au sein de la société.
So just let me translate. So what she's saying is that this is the question between psychology and law. Okay. So what she's saying is that if a patient is recognized of psychotic and psychosis behavior, then responsibility should be excluded. Okay, he shouldn't be responsible from a penal point of view. But from Ariane's point of view, in this particular instance where we are right now, when the person knows, okay, that the intention or that there is a willful intention to harm, then the responsibility cannot be excluded, especially when you are driving an excuse such as, well, it's not really important if a few people are dying for the benefit of the masses. Okay, so when you are sacrificing an individual for the greater goods of the collective behavior, so this is the junction between the two.
But can I ask one question? Like, when I look at some of the people that we see now, like driving this whole panic, pandemic, whatever, you know, like here in Germany at least, I don't think that, like, for instance, Professor Drosten is like in full delusion of, I mean, I just can't imagine that he's in full delusion of what's going on, because he is, like, in a lot of cases saying, wow, it's the virus is not so terrible. You know, I mean, it seems more like some kind of concept of, like, when he mentions this aspect of it, this is dangerous, and then another, oh, it's not so dangerous, and it's going back and forth. It's not like, doesn't seem to be, I mean, I'm just taking him as an example, you know, but, like, I don't think that he's, like, in a full delusion, wow, this is, like, the most dangerous virus that we've ever seen, and the virus is, the vaccine is working, and everyone has to take it and doesn't have any side effects. I do have the feeling that he knows, I mean, I also listened to him in one of the, you know, like, a investigative committee, like, here in the, you know, by the government of the land of Brandenburg in Germany. And, you know, I think he was clearly able to see that we don't have a horrible pandemic situation, but still he's kind of pulling the strings of people, like, by saying the right things at the right moment in order to push on with the agenda, at least to get, like, you know, be be delivered the pretext for the next lockdown and all these things. So I don't personally have the feeling that he is himself in a full delirium. Or is this not, that, is that not the point that the person individually has to be like fully overwhelmed by...
Sur rien, mais ce qu'elle dit, Viviane, c'est que...
J'ai compris. En fait, nous avons affaire à un délire paranoïaque de type hypochondrie délirante qui a certainement été impulsé par des profils paranoïaques dans leur conception du monde. Mais d'abord, leur conception du monde, c'est d'être persécuté par nous, c'est-à-dire des très grands milliardaires qui, ne serait-ce que par le fait de détenir la fortune qu'ils ont, sont coupables vis-à-vis de l'humanité en face qui est dans une, pour une grande partie dans une très grande pauvreté. Donc, le délire paranoïaque, pour eux, c'est la persécution, c'est nous. Et c'est ce qui va arriver ensuite, c'est le fait de cibler une partie de la population, ensuite toute la population, comme étant l'ennemi. Mais il y a plein d'autres profils. Il y a des personnages très cyniques. Il y a des profils pervers qui tirent les ficelles à leur intérêt, qui ne croient pas du tout en l'idéologie.
Ariane, je peux t'arrêter deux minutes. I will do the translation for Vivian. So what Ariane is saying is that she's taken a step back and say, okay, if you're looking at the billionaires club, what you have is one of the starting points that could drive paranoia is or their view of the world is that they own such a large wealth that they can actually believe they are guilty of owning such wealth, you know, with respect to all the others. And they just say, okay, well, I own this. And that drives some form of paranoiac behavior. And so then you have, so that's a feeling of I own so many things and the others, you know, they're the poor other people don't own anything. And therefore it drives a guilty behavior in their own sort of personality. But what she's saying is that there are other behaviors of persecution and other behaviors of perversion. Now, the question, Ariane, la question qu'avait Viviane, c'était dans le cas de Drosden. Drosden,
c'est un pervers, je pense.
C'est l'individu.
Il y a d'autres personnages qui sont très cyniques et qui sont là pour leur propre intérêt, leur carrière politique, etc., et qui ne croient pas du tout en l'idéologie.
Okay, so in the case of there are other profiles of individuals who are either perverts or cynical, and they don't believe in ideology, so they don't engage in ideology. Peut-être une question à Ian. Drosden, c'est un scientifique, d'accord? Est-ce qu'un scientifique qui peut-être n'est pas aussi bien reconnu par les pairs, qui a été peut-être persécuté par ses pairs parce qu'il n'est pas reconnu, est-ce qu'un scientifique de cette nature peut lui-même développer des syndromes d'infériorité et du coup engagé dans un règlement de compte, je pourrais dire, je ne sais pas si c'est le terme, hein, qui le pousserait à instrumentaliser sa science.
Le totalitarisme, c'est le règne de la corruption et le règne des médiocres, quand même le dire.
Okay. So what she's saying is that totalitarianism is the sovereignty of the mediocre individuals. In essence, so the question I ask Vivian and Rainer to Ariane is: in the case of Drosden, he's a scientist, could his perversion, his cynicism, be driven by the fact that he's a failed scientist, for example, that he wasn't actually recognized by his peer? You know, in France, we have Professor Raoult, who is being shot at, is being dismissed. Because he's on top, he's sitting on top of the pyramid, I would say, because he's the most cited professor, and he's being shot down because he's sitting too high. In the case of Drosden, it could be that he's sitting at the bottom of the pyramid and he wants to elevate himself and he instrumentalizes science in order to do that.
That's a very, very good point, because we have learned through talking to some of the experts that he has good reason to believe that he has to protect himself because his reputation has been badly damaged. Because it turns out that he has, as a professor, you normally have to write you have to write a habilitation thesis, which he hasn't done. And that's why two scientists took a closer look at his academic background, and they found that there are very serious questions as to whether or not he has actually written a doctoral dissertation. Maybe he's not even a real doctor. So in this context, this would explain why he would have some kind of paranoia, because he's just a mediocre, or maybe not even a mediocre scientist, some kind of paranoia that would drive him to do the things he's doing, meaning to follow the orders of those who are pulling his strings, because he's protecting himself.
Tu as compris, Ariane, ce qu'il a dit, Rainer?
En fait, le délire paranoïaque est contagieux. Et donc, ce qui va se passer, c'est qu'il y a énormément de profils psychiques qui vont régresser et qui vont pouvoir devenir pervers, par exemple. C'est-à-dire qu'en temps normal, ils n'auraient jamais fait ce qu'ils font. Mais en temps totalitaire, puisque c'est autorisé et puisque eux aussi absorbent l'angoisse, c'est un petit peu compliqué, mais en clair, il y a plein de chez Fayon, de gens qui avaient une revanche à prendre sur le système qui vont prendre le pouvoir, de frustration, en clair, de gens qui vont se révéler pervers, alors que dans un autre contexte, ils ne l'auraient pas été.
Okay, so what she's saying is that in normal times, okay, these types of profile may not reveal themselves as being either paranoiac or perverted. But in the current environment in which we are, which is the totalitarian regime that drives mediocrity, you have a regression in the standards. You have a regression in the moral points. You have a regression in this individual, and that triggers, I would say, this perversion and this perverted behaviors or this paranoiac behaviors. In the case of in normal times, this would not have happened. And then what it drives is individuals, it's their glory time, okay? It's the time of glory. Suddenly, they're sitting in television, they can express themselves, when in normal times, they would have never expressed themselves. They can express themselves on topics that they do not comment. And these topics, suddenly they would be recognized as experts, or they would be brought to light. Okay, so it's the attraction of the light.
That makes so much sense. That makes so much sense.
Ariane, j'ai étendu en disant que le chef Fayon, j'ai dit qu'ils allaient à la télévision et que ça les amenait, c'était leur de gloire, on va appeler ça.
Le totalitarisme persécute les vrais experts, il n'en veut pas. Il ne veut pas des gens qui ont un discours de vérité.
In totalitarian times, what it does is it persecutes the real experts, because they don't want real experts, because the real experts are bringing truth.
And what's the deal with the people who are now questioning the whole situation? Why? How come they have not fallen into the delusion? And you know what's the, because that's that was the second. Why do some people not join regardless of educational status? And we've seen that you know it does not depend on if you're a professor or like a lawyer or whatever to be able to see what's going on. And at the same time, so what's the common demeanor of these people? Okay. Why do they not fall for this thing?
Là, on rentre dans la deuxième question qu'ils avaient, c'était comment se fait-il qu'il y a des individus qui ne sont pas rentrés dans ce délire, dans soit, on va dire, l'instrumentalisation de la persécution ou de la paranoïa, parce que ce qu'ils ont observé, que indifféremment des niveaux culturels ou d'éducation ou d'environnement, il y avait des gens qui n'avaient pas participé, qui n'étaient pas rentrés. On pourrait dire qu'autour de cette pièce, on n'est pas rentré dans ce délire. Pourquoi? Qu'est-ce qui ferait qu'on ne rentre pas là-dedans?
Alors, j'ai plusieurs hypothèses.
Il y a several hypotheses.
La première, c'est que ce sont des profils autonomes qui sont capables d'être isolés des groupes.
The first one is that these are autonomous people that are able to be isolated from a group.
Ça suppose, dans son développement psychologique, d'avoir intériorisé une certaine autonomie, c'est-à-dire la capacité à respecter les lois, même si à l'extérieur, ça ne fonctionne plus. Même si à l'extérieur, tout est transgression, ce qui est le cas du totalitarisme, il y a une autonomie interne qui a été acquise dans le développement psychologique de la personne.
Okay, so what you're saying is that the individuals that are not engaged into such, I would say, delirium, have a certain amount of autonomy. That means that when everything breaks down, that all of the rules that are, and that there is, I would say, turmoil in the way the rules are being implemented, these individuals still have a belief in those rules, and they are capable of applying those rules despite the fact that the rest of the population isn't applying those rules. Okay? They are exercising an independent judgment and an autonomous judgment, regardless of whether the majority is in engaging into a transgression of the rules.
Mm-hmm. Dans cette première hypothèse, ce sont des individus qui ont réellement intégré les interdits fondamentaux de civilisation, notamment l'interdit du meurtre.
Okay, so what you're saying is that these individuals have totally totally understood and integrated the murder decisions, you know, the relation towards murder.
L'interdit, la prohibition.
The transgression of murder decision. The prohibition of murder. Mm-hmm.
So they have an inner compass, so to speak. They know their direction because they, regardless of what the group says, they can still distinguish good and evil, right?
Alors, il dit que là, les gens ont une boussole interne qui leur permet de déterminer le bien du mal. Peu importe ce que disent les autres.
Oui, je vais y venir parce que ça a un rapport avec la vérité. Le deuxième point, enfin, j'ai relevé 5 points pour les personnes qui ne rentrent pas, qui ne sont pas rentrées dans le délire. Donc le premier, capacité d'isolement, autonomie. Je vais juste à chaque fois dire ce que c'est l'inverse pour le totalitarisme. Alors, peut-être, Xavier, tu peux dire, il y a 5 points. Le premier, c'est l'autonomie.
There are 5 points. The first one is autonomy and the ability of each individual to isolate themselves from the mass. Mm-hmm. In a positive sense, isolation, they're not being isolated. They are isolating themselves. Huh?
Yeah, they can disconnect. They can disconnect, yes.
À chaque fois, je vais dire l'inverse que propose le totalitarisme. Le totalitarisme, sa proposition, c'est l'individu n'est rien, restons tous collés. Le corps collectif est tout.
Okay, what she's now saying is that she's going to say the opposite of what the totalitarianism narrative gives. Here, what she's saying is that in a totalitarian regime, individual is nobody, is nothing. It's only the collective that actually counts. Mm-hmm.
Okay, ça c'est le premier point. Deuxième point, ce sont des profils qui ont intérioriser, accepter dans leur développement psychique notre finitude. C'est quoi notre finitude? Je ne suis pas tout, ni sur un plan spatial, ni temporel. Je n'ai pas tous les droits et je vais mourir.
Okay, so what she's saying is that it's quite complicated, but I'm going to try and actually use to find the right words. The profile of individuals that have interiorized in within themselves that what is in the end, okay? It means that I am a finite person. I am not everything. I'm not the bearer of truth. I will die one day. So they have a certain relationship towards some construct, probably which are more brought down towards the earth, I would say. They are living down to earth. Ils sont des gens qui sont plus terriens, peut-être, Ariane, ou quoi?
They're connected to reality.
Ça, c'est un autre point.
Okay,
ça, c'est vraiment le point numéro 2, il est très important, c'est psychologiquement, la vie, c'est une perte. C'est-à-dire, nous sommes en train d'avancer dans le temps, donc nous allons, à un moment donné, ça nous rapproche de notre mort. Nous ne pouvons pas tout avoir, nous ne pouvons pas avoir tous les pouvoirs, c'est-à-dire, nous sommes des êtres limités.
Because what you're saying is that the second point is that we are individuals, or maybe I would explain it as a mathematician, it's going to be easier. In mathematics, you have functions which are finite functions. It basically means life starts and you have a life expectancy of 88 years. You have the resources of the world which are finite. And here, the profile is that life is a loss. And they have integrated that we're living into a finite world. Mm-hmm.
Donc, par exemple, dans ce deuxième point, nous avons conscience du temps qui passe et nous avons conscience que nous n'occupons pas tout l'espace. Ce que je vais dire, ce que c'est.
Okay, we are conscious that of time that actually goes by and that we're not occupying all, the entire space.
Mm-hmm.
We are conscious of our limit.
Pour le totalitarisme, le temps n'existe pas. Il fonctionne de façon circulaire et immobile. Et le totalitarisme vise l'expansion spatiale.
Mm-hmm. So for totalitarianism, time doesn't actually exist. It circulates, it goes round in circle. And totalitarianism exercises itself across the entire space. It's the total mm-hmm. control.
Maybe it's also, you know, sorry, maybe it's also that I, that, you know, when you, for the second point, that it's also that you can see the limit of what you are allowed to do, you know, by the right of the other people, you know, basically like our basic law, you know, like you can only, you know, live your right to whatever freedom or whatever, while not interfering, like killing someone else to have fun or something like that, you know. So that's the, I mean, not to have fun, but like you are doing something and that's going to kill someone else and you don't care, you know.
Donc, so est-ce que ça veut dire que les limites, Ariane, est-ce que ça veut dire que les limites, que quelqu'un connaît ses limites, là où finissent ses limites et commencent celles de quelqu'un d'autre, ou est-ce qu'on pourrait dire que c'est une forme de compréhension de la relativité de, vis-à-vis de tout le système, de sa propre relativité?
Tout à fait, de sa propre finitude, oui.
Okay, so it's using Einstein's term, then, you know, the theory of relativity, that somebody will understand relativity towards others, where, you know, its end starts where somebody else's beginning is. Mm-hmm. So there is a relation to others that's well understood.
Does it mean that people who resort to totalitarianism, that these people, because of the fact that they're afraid that someday someone is going to discover that they're only mediocre at best, they resort to fantasies of omnipotency and want to live forever. Is that, this is very, very simplified question I'm asking here, but is that the reason why these people are looking to totalitarianism to escape from, or to keep others from finding out that these guys are only mediocre? So they have to flee to grandiose dreams and believe in life forever, and there's no time limits for them.
Oui, il y a absolument dans dans le transhumanisme, il y a le délire d'immortalité.
Mm-hmm. So what you're saying, in transhumanism, there's the delirium of immortality.
Yeah, that explains everything, yes.
Je dirai après, je vais lister les points,
vas-y.
Et après je reviendrai sur le... Voilà. Troisième point, une capacité à clarifier les places et avoir un ancrage de vérité.
Okay, what the third point is the capacity to clarify the various places.
La confusion et à chercher la vérité.
Okay, to clarify the places that individuals have between space and temporality and also a relation towards reality, towards truth.
La vérité, l'ancrage de vérité, c'est-à-dire la capacité de faire la distinction entre la vérité et le mensonge, ça va avec la capacité morale. De point de vue psychologique, ça va ensemble. Capacité à distinguer le bien, le mal, parce qu'il ne peut pas y avoir de justice si on n'a pas, on recherche pas la vérité.
So, the ability of an individual to establish his truth from lies, okay, goes alongside with his moral capacity, or his ability to apply the principle of moral.
Mm-hmm.
Et à l'inverse, le totalitarisme, c'est le règne du mensonge, de l'arbitraire et de l'injustice.
And you know, on the opposite, totalitarianism is the reign of lies. Redis parce que j'ai maintenant
arbitraire et injustice.
Arbitrary and absence of justice, injustice.
Mm-hmm.
Quatrième point.
Fourth point.
La capacité pour la personne psychique de surmonter les traumatismes. Ça peut venir de l'expérience passée.
Okay, this is the fourth point is the ability of any individual to overcome a trauma that you may have had from your child or from the past.
Mm-hmm.
Et une capacité en même temps de prendre de la distance par rapport aux discours qui sont mis sur le trauma.
And the ability to take a distance from any narrative that are being given on trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Parce que le totalitarisme, il traumatise, mais il dit c'était pas grave, c'est rien, c'est pour votre bien.
Okay, so because in totalitarianism, the narrative is saying this is not really important. We've taken these measures for your good, and therefore this is not really important. So in essence, it's not important that a few people dies, a few individuals dies because we're acting in the interest of the masses. And here, this fourth point is the ability of an individual to distance himself from this narrative and to see the wood from the trees.
Mm-hmm.
Et le cinquième point, c'est l'ancrage avec la réalité.
So the fifth point is the anchor with reality.
Mm-hmm.
C'est-à-dire que moins les personnes auront fait des études, plus elles seront en lien avec la réalité de l'expérience, c'est-à-dire moins elles seront dans le discours et plus dans l'expérience, moins elles sont manipulables.
Okay, and here it's the opposite to the level of education. The lower the education level, the more anchored they are in reality, or the more they are capable of staying anchored into reality.
Mm-hmm.
The more they have, educated themselves, the more they are capable of distancing from reality.
Very good. Very good.
Voilà, en clair, l'exemple que je prends, si on vous raconte et on vous fait un grand doctorat sur le fait qu'il faut absolument, c'est bien d'arroser une plante avec de l'essence, quelqu'un qui est juste dans la réalité de l'expérience sait que ça n'est pas bien. Il ne sait pas l'expliquer, mais il sait juste que ça n'est pas bien. Et c'est ce qu'on appelle en psychologie le principe de réalité.
Okay, the example that she's saying is the principle of reality is that if you tell someone to take a green plant, okay, and to pour diesel over it or gas or gasoline over it, and suddenly they imply that pouring diesel over it is going to help it grow, and it's to distance itself from this, in fact, false narrative.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's a good example, actually.
So what we have here is those people who do not fall victim to this false narrative, to this type of paranoia. They're the ones who are anchored in reality, who can tell the lies from the truth, and who have a built-in sense as to what is good and what is evil. That's really what it boils down to. Of course, it's more complicated in these five aspects that you just mentioned, but I think that's really what it boils down to. You have to be anchored in reality. You have to be able to understand your limitations. We're all going to die someday. And you have to be able to tell good from bad. I think that's really what it is. And if you do not have these capacities, then it's easier for you to fall victim to these paranoid stories that they're trying to tell us.
And Rainer, I would add one thing that Ariane added, is that the higher the education level, the more distance you are, and it requires probably a higher moral stance. Mm-hmm. C'est une interprétation. Ça veut dire pour qu'un individu garde la notion de la réalité, quelqu'un qui a fait de très très hautes études, ça demande une morale qui est sûrement au-delà des limites, non?
Oui, une morale, une expérience de vie, un rapport à la vérité.
Somebody that has a very high level of study needs to have some level of moral, some experience of life, and a relation to truth, which is somehow different. So probably it could come from family background, personal experience, some event that you've had in your life, whatever.
Mm-hmm. I understand.
Mm-hmm. Ariane, juste une question. Est-ce que les gens qui ont eu des expériences proches de la mort, on prend quelqu'un de très éduqué, qui a eu une expérience et un très grave accident, est-ce que ça peut être un facteur ou est-ce que l'absence d'expérience de la mort, puisqu'on n'a pas eu de guerre depuis très longtemps, donc on sait plus ce que c'est que d'être dans un conflit, on ne sait plus ce que c'est qu'avoir la vraie peur de la mort. Aujourd'hui, on nous a donné la perception de la peur de la mort au travers de ce virus, puisqu'en fait, ce virus n'est pas très létal. Est-ce que si quelqu'un a une expérience, ce qu'on appelle les near-death experiences, tu vois, les expériences proches de la mort, ça peut affecter quelqu'un de très éduqué, plus que…
Tout dépend comment la personne l'a traversé. Je pense que c'est une relation de… Par exemple, il est certain que des gens qui ont déjà vécu des situations de type totalitaire dans des entreprises, dans leur famille, et qui en sont sortis et qui ont traversé plein de traumatismes par rapport à ça, sont beaucoup plus immunisés aujourd'hui à ce qui se passe que les autres. Enfin, moi, je vois chez mes parents.
So what she's saying is that the question I ask is somebody that has suffered a near-death experience, you know, and very highly educated, because we've been into a very calm period of our lives, 70 years without conflict. In essence, we do not know exactly what death is anymore. So suddenly our relationship to death has been affected by this virus. And what she's saying is that those individuals that have experienced totalitarianism, be it in an organization, be it in their household, that, you know, narcissistic perversion, or people who have had to exclude themselves from this totalitarian regime, and that have come out, without being affected by this, are probably stronger than somebody that hasn't.
Absolutely.
Comme la magnifique Vera Sharab, moi j'adore.
Okay, yeah, very, very interesting and a lot of food for thought, yeah.
This was great. This is, I think this is an extension of what Professor Desmet, whom you know, has told us. It fits right in, it's perfect. It gives us an even bigger picture, an even clearer picture of what is behind all of this. I'm very grateful for you taking this time, and you too, of course, for translating. Thank you very much, Virginie, and thank you very much, Xavier.
Rainer, I think Ariane wanted to add a few things. Yeah.
Of course, go ahead.
Quelle est la promesse? Il faut comprendre pourquoi ça fonctionne, le totalitarisme. Parce que on peut pas dire ce que des fous ou des criminels. Ça fonctionne sur la population. Parce que dans le totalitarisme, il y a une promesse qui est faite, qui ne sera pas tenue. Hein, mais...
Okay, what she's saying is that, which is the last part of the speech, is that what makes totalitarianism work? And the starting point is that it's because there is a promise, okay? A promise that won't be fulfilled, of course. So what is
La promesse, c'est aux populations, c'est la prise en charge totale de la souffrance de leur existence et le retour à un paradis perdu.
Okay, and what she's saying is that the promise is that the government will take over the total, I would say, problem of their suffering, okay? And the promise that you will get your life back, in essence, that you will go back to a lost paradise.
Yeah, that's a very childlike belief, if anyone believes in this.
Absolument. Et donc, c'est une tentation pour la majorité de régresser dans les bras de maman et de ne pas prendre ses responsabilités.
So it's a temptation for any individual to regress and to go back to his mother's arms and not to take any responsibility for what's happening.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Perfect.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ariane. I'm impressed. I think we're all impressed. This is extremely helpful. We must stay in touch because we need more of such information. I think the situation will maybe very quickly change, and then we need more such answers. Thank you so much.
And Ryan, now you understand why Virginie, when she actually prepared the proceeding, she thought that this was a cornerstone element, because this expresses the propaganda in a very scientific manner, that any judge, you know, you'd say, well, you have the publication, the reality, the realism of publication of a truth. You know, is this a truth? If it's not a truth, then it's part of the narrative that will influence individuals. And so if we can understand this, then we make it easy for any judge to actually understand. And the principle is that he then ends up by having the facts. Was early treatment excluded? Because it didn't work. No, it wasn't excluded because it didn't work. It was excluded because it's driven by somebody that is sitting on top and is being attacked, is being brought down. He's sitting on top with the highest level of proof, and the one that sits at the bottom is the one that has the lowest level of proof. And so it's a reversal of this mechanism. For me, when I read the document, I just thought, okay, it's pretty perfect. That's why when I left you a message, I said, you need to also look at this claim. Because if we could do this claim in Germany or in Italy, because the work that Virginie has done, is you can almost, I've sent it to a Brazilian team, because we had contact with the Brazilian professor, which was very interesting, because they initiated a similar type of claim. But they started from the pyramid of proof from a medical point of view. And Virginie started from the pyramid of proof from a legal point of view. And she basically married the two. And that is the starting point. And now they're taking it, they're translating it. Since the narrative that you had in Germany is the same, you just need to change the name of the media. You just need to translate the text. Change the name of the individuals, and you have you can invoke and you can go after the responsibility of those not that own, you know, not the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, those puppets who are responsible for the penal, who have the penal responsibility. Yeah. What will they do in turn if you have a prosecutor in front of them? They will give in and they will say, okay, well, you know, I did not know. Well, you published it, so you're guilty of publishing something that has influenced an individual. And at that point in time, they will actually seek the responsibility of the doctors, who will in turn seek the responsibility. But by the way, this is not for public consumption, okay, what I'm saying right now. Is it okay?
Oh. Yeah.
This is the last part.
However, this is a live stream. This is a live stream.
So it is for public consumption. So you should be careful. Watch your words.
I will not actually go to the very end.
Okay. Let's make a full stop here because we have kept our next guest waiting for much too long already. But again, I'm extremely grateful to all three of you. This was very important insight into the psychological background of what this paranoia is about. Very, very important.
Merci beaucoup.
Thank you and have a great weekend.
Yeah.
Thank you. Great
weekend.
Thank
you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.